Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you once again from the NFL Scouting Combine in downtown Indianapolis. And Wes, on Thursday, the Combine shifted from the focus on the general managers and head coaches meeting with the media to the first group of prospects coming through and talking to reporters. And one position group that came through was the running backs. And a lot of Packers fans have their eye on a guy from Stanford, Christian McCaffrey, the former Heisman Trophy runner-up. He's got a direct connection to the Packers right now.
He does, Mike, but I'm actually going to stop you right there.
Okay.
You were actually wrong on one point. Everybody had their eye on Christian McCaffrey this week. I mean, if you base it just strictly on the amount of media that was attention that was generated, this is a young man that I think a lot of people are looking at right now. Because in a lot of ways, you're throwing out the rule book when it comes to prototypical football players. And McCaffrey's one of those, I think, has those hybrid tendencies that everybody's looking for. But to your original point, he does have some connections to Green Bay, including his brother Max, who signed to the Packers practice squad at the end of last season, and then with the mounting injuries at receiver, actually ended up being promoted to the 53 for the playoff game against Atlanta. Now, he wasn't active in that contest, but it does show you that they thought a lot of him and enough of him to bring him on there in case of emergency.
Yeah, interesting with these two brothers. Max goes the undrafted route to the NFL, originally signs with the Oakland Raiders as a rookie free agent when he isn't selected. His younger brother, now Christian, being looked at as possibly as high as a first-round draft pick. So very different there, but very typical in the sense of what we heard from Christian yesterday, that their sibling rivalry, the one-on-one basketball games and the football tackling and everything that was going on in the backyard, pretty normal for brothers, especially as close as they were in age. They have a pretty special relationship, it sounds like.
Yeah, they certainly do, Mike. And, you know, Christian even said, I mean, that is his best friend. Those are the two guys. And when they came up, obviously, it's interesting being the son of a player as accomplished as Ed McCaffrey. So there's only two people that are going to know what that's like, and that's you and your brothers. So for Christian and being able to come into this environment now, obviously Max wasn't at the combine, but still I think he's used to this big kind of the spotlight being on him. And certainly when you look at teams looking to fill that void, whether it's receiver, you know, or the running back guys who can catch out of the backfield, he's certainly someone that I think a lot of people are going to be keeping an eye on these next couple months.
Yeah, and you mentioned the father, Ed McCaffrey, and another memory that was discussed with Christian and the media, though he doesn't remember it all that well, but apparently there's a picture of him that he believes appeared in Sports Illustrated that's on the wall back at home in Colorado, where he's wearing his father's jersey as a 19-month-old running around on the field at Super Bowl 32 with the confetti falling right after the Broncos beat the Packers, the John Elway, Brett Favre Super Bowl. I know that's not a good memory for Packers fans, but Christian kind of got a smile on his face about that, although, as I said, he doesn't remember it all that well. The other connection then, too, is Stanford's Ty Montgomery,
right,
a teammate of Christian's a couple of years ago. And he was asked about, I have in fact asked him about Ty Montgomery and that transition to running back, and he said he wasn't surprised at all.
No, he wasn't. And I think if you talk to anybody that's been around him, he's always had those tweener-type characteristics. 6 foot, 216 pounds. That really could go either way in terms of how you utilize a guy. I know David Bakhtiari said during the season when I asked him about it, it wasn't a surprise to anybody in the Packers locker room, because if you look at him, he looks like an Under Armour model. I mean, he's just muscles upon muscles. And really, that's what it comes down to. And being able to have that size, being able to have that strength in carrying the football, I was really impressed by what he did throughout the course of the year. And when you go back to Stanford and the way that they do use those type of players, they find ways to make them work. I mean, that's something that David Shaw has really, really been able to execute on. And now we'll see whether or not how Christian McCaffrey will adapt to this next level.
Yeah, and McCaffrey is about as all everything as it gets on offense with the ball in his hands. In his college career, he scored touchdowns four different ways: rushing the ball, catching passes, returning punts and kickoffs. He found the end zone. He piled up more than 6,000, I believe it was, all-purpose yards over his last two seasons at Stanford. This is a guy that he's going to find a way to make a creative offensive coordinator, creative offensive mind, very happy in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the ultimate intrigue right now with teams that are really being able to take a look at him, studying his game and seeing exactly where he might fit in at the next level. But I think if you talk to anybody right now at this place, that's what it's all about, just trying to see exactly how these players can potentially fit into a lineup. And Christian McCaffrey is one of the ones that I think has a lot of the intrigue following him.
Yeah, and one of the other interesting things in general about the running back group, they're talking possibly as many as four running backs being drafted in the first round of this NFL draft. A few years ago, that would have been unheard
right.
of. The NFL went 2013 and 14, I believe, with no running backs taken in the first round. Ezekiel Elliott last year, the Cowboys way up at number four at the top of the first round took him. He became an MVP candidate, the leading rusher in the league. It's changed the way the running back position is being perceived in terms of the value in the draft.
Yeah, and everyone's going to be looking for that next Zeke Elliott. Now, the people that I did talk to at the Combine so far actually aren't really buying into that thinking. They think that they're still going to get drafted as they are, but you still can't help but think that there's going to be a certain amount of coaches out there that are very intrigued at that and potentially being able to unearth another one of those guys. It's a copycat league, Mike, and I mean, teams are going to want to find the next guy that could step in and make that kind of contribution. How many of those end up coming in the first round? Obviously, we have to wait and see.
Yeah, again, as you say, wait and see. But with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted with a special guest in Larry McCarron from the NFL Scouting Combine right after this.
And welcome back, everybody, to the NFL Scouting Combine. I'm Wes Hodkowitz, joined alongside our Packers analyst, Larry McCarron, at the Indiana the Convention Center. Larry, we get on the field today. Not us, of course, but the NFL.
That'd be exciting.
I'm guessing you'll handle it a little
bit. I went one-on-one with Spock yesterday. Your turn. Who's next?
You'd still destroy
Start
me,
saying
I'm
your
sure
prayers, buddy. Okay, what's up?
But these prospects now are going to be able to get out there, show what they can do in that capacity. The thing that's interesting, I mean, people are going to really get their eyes set on 40 times and all these different measurables. To a certain extent, it still is a crapshoot, though. I mean, you're not going to really be able to see what these guys do until they get on the field, but it does at least give you a sense of what kind of players that you're dealing with.
No, it gives you a sense of measurables, but my problem with the whole setup and in placing too much credibility into just the measurables is that a prospect can prepare for what's going to happen.
Right.
He can practice and so forth, and he can anticipate what he has to do. Now, he's not reacting during a three-cone drill. He knows he's got to run there, there, and there. And the same with all the drills. And the game of football really isn't played that way. Combine testing, what they're going to be doing today in the next couple days, it's more like playing a football game, and you know how every play is going to unfold.
Right.
You can anticipate what you're going to have to do through the course of every play, and real football, quite frankly, isn't that way. And we have a great example in Green Bay history. In the 90s, Tony Mandarich, like the third player picked in the draft, something
yeah,
like that,
right.
Above Barry Sanders. Am I getting that right?
You are.
You're the historical
guy. I think it was second, but he was still
okay,
ahead of
second
Sanders,
guy, but
sure.
Ahead of Barry Sanders. And he was the incredible bulk. I mean,
right.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. In the first practice, you watch him, and it's not Tony's fault. You watch him, he doesn't have real good feet.
Yeah.
You know, that shadow, that slide-to-slide that tackles need to pass protect, he didn't have it.
Right.
And you could see it. But the measurables where he could think it out and say, oh, I got to run around this cone, I got to run back and touch the line, that kind of stuff, he was great at. But the actual game of football, not so great.
You know, what's interesting, too, Larry, when you look at the Packers' offensive line and the way they've structured over the years, there aren't a whole lot of first-round draft picks. I mean, you have Brian Bulaga, but for the most part,
it's
David Bakhtiari, it's T.J. Lang.
Fourth-rounders.
Unbelievable. I mean, so what do you think the difference
undrafted
is there?
Undrafted free agent,
yeah.
Fifth-rounder. I mean,
yeah, Lane
kind of
Taylor.
Stuff.
I
yeah.
mean, so what is the difference? I mean, is it just being able to get on the field and showing what you can do, or is there something you do look for, you know, whatever tests there are to show what a guy could potentially do that transcend that?
Well, I think the position drills, the position-specific drills for offensive linemen really are important because then the offensive line coaches can see what kind of slide and shadow he's got. But offensive line, I've always thought, is one of those positions, perhaps the best example of a position on a football team where coaching, you take a young fella with enough ability. You can't just be a non-athlete, but you take a fellow with enough ability, and we mentioned him, some of the Packer offensive linemen, take that guy, and if he's got the right attitude and he's got the right coach, you can make football players out of less spectacular athlete. Good offensive linemen, the Packers are a great, great example.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, I know T.J. Lang's thoughts on this many years ago, but the 40-yard dash for an offensive lineman, anything to draw out of that at all, or what do you think the value is in that drill?
Oh, you get to see a big guy run and see if he's all over the place. It's a measure of athletic ability and top-end speed. That's all well and good. However, if I'm looking at it, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to the first 10, the 10-yard split, than anything else. After that, hey, it's gravy, but that 10-yard split matters. I mean, offensive lineman, you're operating in a 5-yard right. square. How quick can you move over that square?
And I want to ask you this just to close on one final thought. This NFL Combine, you've been around this a lot longer than I have. What do you think?
Sorry.
Sorry, don't mean to offend anything.
No gray hair on you yet, huh?
There's okay. a couple in Wonderful. There somewhere. But, I mean, what do you think of this whole thing? We have the bench press over here, stands all over the place, just how this process has evolved. And now it isn't just guys sitting in front of some scouts. They're in front of fans now, too, checking this out worldwide.
Well, I think it's just a sign of the times.
Yeah.
The NFL is probably the world's greatest marketing machine. It's gotten to the point that the NFL has something going on 365 days a year for people to talk about, get excited about. And the fan involvement that we're seeing an increase of this year, it's going to continue because that's the NFL. And yeah. those folks that are here watching this stuff, digesting it on TV, they're the grease that makes the wheel turn.
Definitely. Well, Mike and I have two more segments to go. After that, maybe you and I can check out the 40-yard dash or something like that. See how
super,
we stack
up. Super.
That might be the one thing I could potentially do here. So for Larry McCarron, I'm Wes Sockowitz. We'll see you here in the next segment.
Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz from Packers.com coming to you from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. And Wes, this hosting deal isn't as easy as it looks.
No, it's not. You make it look really seamless. I'm sitting here ready to end the show, and I had a quick on my feet thing to get back to the next segment.
We weren't quite done yet.
No,
we still had to keep going here. But with that, you and Larry were talking about offensive linemen, and that was a position group that we heard from. They came through the media center on Thursday. An offensive lineman from South Carolina State that you talked to had an interesting story to tell.
Yeah, Javaris Lehman from South Carolina State. I think he was the third guy, he said, during his time at this college that he actually was able to get to the scouting combine. Really interesting story with him because he's one of the few guys that actually played with both Joe Thomas Sr. and Joe Jr. I mean, it's incredible how this worked out. Joe Sr., obviously, the 55-year-old running back, father of Packers linebacker Joe Thomas, he actually became the oldest guy, believed to be the oldest guy in Division I football history, to get action in a D1 game. 4 carries, I think he got back in November against Savannah State, had practiced with the team for a number of years, finally got that opportunity. Well, Lehman was on the ball club with him, and then he also played his first 2 years of college football with Joe Thomas Jr. So a little bit of an interesting tie-in there, but I thought the one thing that was really interesting that he mentioned with Joe Jr., everything that you see with the Packers doesn't surprise him whatsoever. That's something he'd been doing for years with the Bulldogs, and being able to keep that at the next level also gives him a little bit of motivation, proof that, you know, even if a guy coming from that FCS level could still make it.
Yeah, that must have been a fun senior day at South Carolina State with a 55-year-old running back taking a few carries there. I'm sure that fired up the crowd quite a bit. But moving on with our discussion of the offensive linemen, you also spoke with a former teammate of Packers offensive lineman Jason Spriggs. The Packers, remember, traded up to draft Spriggs in the second round last year, and one of his teammates is fairly highly thought of around here again.
Yeah, Dan Fenney, a two-time All-American, I believe he was, ex-team captain in Indiana, was actually on the offensive line with Spriggs for 2 seasons, would have been 3 if Fenney wouldn't have had a season-ending injury. I believe it was his sophomore year, but they were on that same offensive line. He played right guard, Spriggs obviously left tackle. So it's not like they lined up against each other, not lined up next to each other. But the one thing that was interesting, getting ready for this process, he'd been texting quite a bit with Spriggs to get a feel of what this environment is like, what to expect, and just some overall encouragement that, hey, be yourself, do everything you've always done. Can go a long way in this kind of process, and certainly now trying to follow in Spriggs' footsteps to the NFL.
Definitely. And also with offensive linemen, well, guys who have caught the spotlight here a little bit on Thursday, Wisconsin Badgers players.
Yeah.
And one of the rather highly touted prospects here is Ryan Ramczyk. And, boy, you talk about an unconventional path from where he was to now being – talked about as maybe the first offensive lineman taken in this draft. Tell us about Ramczyk's story.
Yeah, his is probably the most unique, I think, out of anybody that I've covered at a combine. There's probably some other ones out there I haven't been able to get to, but he started at UW-Stevens Point, his hometown. He actually, coming out of high school, was a pretty highly regarded prospect, but wanted to go to technical school instead. Gave up, forwent some D1 scholarship offers, including one, I believe, to Pittsburgh, where Paul Chryst was there.
Okay.
So he sits out a year there, comes back a year later, decides, you know what, I want to try this, plays 2 years at Stevens Point, and then when Chryst goes over to Wisconsin, transfers there, sits out for a season. What was interesting is listening to a lot of his teammates talk about how when he was on the scout team last year, they already knew what to expect with this guy, that he could play. Ends up becoming the starting left tackle this year for the Badgers, and as you said, while he is dealing with a hip injury right now, surgery, that could potentially keep him out until training camp, could still very well be the first guy that comes off the board when it comes to those offensive linemen.
That's pretty remarkable when you're talking about a guy whose football career in college started at the Division III level and even was delayed somewhat at that, to be getting the attention that he's getting and as highly touted a prospect as he is. Now, a couple of guys that Ramczyk blocked for at Wisconsin, running backs Corey Clement and Dare Ogunbowale, also met with the media on Thursday. And Clement, a guy who maybe was hoping for a little bit higher draft stock at this point than where he is, but nonetheless a pretty talented kid.
One of the guys he pointed to, though, is James White, another guy that came out of Wisconsin, ended up being a fourth-round pick by the New England Patriots, and I don't know if you were watching, Mike, but he ended up winning a Super Bowl, too, with 14 catches, breaking a record. So it shows you that these guys can come from any level, anywhere, at any time, and make a big contribution in the NFL. But he did. He pointed to Melvin Gordon. He pointed to White, two guys that he actually did play with at Wisconsin, as being kind of motivating factors for him and wanting to continue on that legacy of Wisconsin Badger football and running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, and Ogunbowale, another one of those potentially a James White type of guy who can catch passes, had really good hands at Wisconsin, not as highly thought of maybe in terms of draft stock as Corey Clement, but a guy that NFL teams are paying attention to as well.
And one of the big question marks, too, because he did start his college career as a defensive back. You don't hear a lot of guys making a transition from DB to running back, but that's something he did, and he did it very well during his time with the Badgers.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, with that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted from the Scouting Combine right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted from the NFL Scouting Combine in downtown Indianapolis. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz from Packers.com. And Wes, to backtrack just a minute to a topic that we heard about from Mike McCarthy that we haven't had a chance to discuss on the show yet, and that is the hybrid safety linebacker role that the Packers developed in 2016 for veteran safety Morgan Burnett. From what Mike McCarthy said, from what he told us, it sounds like the Packers and their defense are just getting started with this with number 42.
You know what's interesting? You go back to 2010, nobody was talking about hybrid defensive backs or hybrid linebackers, but you know, Morgan Burnett was kind of ahead of his time a little bit. And now the Packers seem to have found a niche that really he fits well into, which is kind of diversifying that skill set, using him in a multitude of different ways. Now, I don't think they were anticipating using him as much as they did in the box this season, but injuries kind of necessitated that. I mean, you look at the inside linebackers, cornerbacks, two positions that got really thin throughout the course of the year just due to a lot of injuries. Well, he stepped in at both of those spots and really played well. So going forward now, the big thing I took away from McCarthy during the time that we were speaking with them, they want to take that role, they want to expand it even more, they want to build more concepts off of it, and really want to take advantage of his skill set because it is quite unique.
Yeah, when you talk about moving Burnett around from the back end to run support against the box to guarding tight ends on routes over the middle, a lot of that depends on having the proper depth at safety, and we don't know what's going to happen with Micah Hyde here in free agency. The Packers will have a decision to make there. But a guy to keep an eye on maybe is last year's undrafted rookie Kentrell Bryce, who kind of came out of nowhere, you might say, from the start of training camp, but through the course of his rookie season, not only making the roster, but proving during the regular season that he belongs in the NFL.
Yeah, and it does. As you mentioned, Mike, it takes two to tango with that. You can have guys that are really versatile and you can move around, but you also need guys to step up behind them and play well, and that's something that Bryce did. And now, mind you, he also was pretty much option five going into the season. They had Micah Hyde, but he was needed in the slot cornerback spot due to injuries. Chryst Banjo had the hamstring injury and then found his way on to injured reserve. Well, here comes Kentrell Bryce, a guy that they were very high on, but really stepped up well considering all the things working against him, you know, on the short schedule, being able to come in and play well as an undrafted rookie. The ceiling's pretty high for him, and I think that's one of the reasons why when you talk about where they're going next year in this role that Morgan Burnett is going to be in, yeah, it's also Kentrell Bryce and some of the things that he did that have given the Packers confidence that they can still proceed this way.
Yeah, definitely. And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the play and the development of HaHa Clinton-Dix and what he's able to do, his versatility, his playmaking ability, the trust that the defensive coaches have in him is also what frees up a guy like Burnett to maximize on his skills. We've seen HaHa Clinton-Dix with his range in center field. We've seen him be an extra run defender in the box when needed. He's a guy that, you know, maybe is just scratching the surface, you might say, even though he made it to the Pro Bowl this year.
Right, and I think you especially look at his age and the things that he has going for him right now. There's a lot of upside with HaHa Clinton-Dix. The Packers saw it when they drafted him in 2014. And the other thing I kind of look at, too, is the leadership value that he's given him back there. You lose Morgan Burnett, you push him up near the line of scrimmage, you need another key communicator to step up. That's what Clinton-Dix did for this defense in 2016, on top of a lot of plays, 5 interception, tied for the most with Landon Collins in the NFL among safeties. There's a lot of positives there with him, and I think when you look at those two guys working together, there really is one of the deepest spots on this roster at this point in time.
Yeah, and I spoke with HaHa Clinton-Dix right after the season was over, and he didn't want to come off as being braggadocious at all, but he said, hey, I don't even feel like I'm close to where maybe I can be. He feels like there's still a lot in front of him, another level perhaps that he can take his game to. You combine that with a veteran presence like Burnett, the second longest tenured player in Dom Capers' defense. The Packers really like what they have moving forward at safety.
And those two guys like each other. I mean, they've developed a pretty close bond both on and off the field, which I think has kind of added to that culture that Darren Perry sort of bred into that safeties room. I mean, that's going to be a big thing for this defense going forward, is those guys working together, being able to further develop that chemistry and taking advantage of it, you know, on Sundays.
Yeah, and we'll see just what happens now in the Packers' defensive backfield through this combine process, through the draft, who else maybe comes in for 2017. But with that, we're going to sign off on Packers Unscripted from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodquitz from Packers.com. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on the website. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.